Right now, it is actually cheaper to buy a massive multi-million square foot office complex in Houston than it is to build a neighborhood grocery plaza.
Yeah, which is just wild to think about.
It really is. I mean, when you look at the commercial real estate landscape in mid-April 2026, you are looking at a market that has just turned completely upside down.
Absolutely.
So welcome to today's deep dive, brought to you by Eureka Business Group, your authoritative commercial real estate broker in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specializing in retail.
That's right.
We are analyzing a pretty comprehensive stack of recent industry reports, market data, and national news articles today to map out the current state of commercial real estate.
Oh.
And the central paradox we're exploring for you today is how, despite a deeply challenging macroeconomic environment filled with, sticky inflation and a completely frozen debt market, the retail sector has somehow emerged as the most coveted asset class in the industry.
Yeah, it's executing what analysts are calling a quiet revenge.
A quiet revenge. I love that phrase.
Yeah.
So to start us off, before we can really understand why retail is winning, we have to look at the tough global economic weather that makes this success so surprising, right?
Right, exactly. To understand the mechanics of this retail resurgence, we really have to look at the macroeconomic pressure cooker that is defining the broader real estate market right now. The global economic weather is just exceptionally harsh.
Yeah.
For instance, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, recently downgraded its global growth expectations for 2026 down to just 3.1%.
Wow, 3.1.
Yeah, and the primary mechanism driving this sluggishness is the energy shock rippling outward from the ongoing conflict in Iran. When you examine the U.S. producer price data from March, you see a 4% year-over-year surge.
Right.
But the vital context here is that this surge was almost entirely propelled by a massive monthly jump in energy costs, with gasoline spiking nearly 15.7%.
Wait, 15.7% in a single month?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. And I mean, that energy spike cascades directly into the fundamentals of commercial real estate development, doesn't it?
Oh, completely.
Because it makes construction materials so much more expensive to produce and significantly more expensive to transport to a job site.
Yeah, the logistics costs just skyrocket.
Right. And it also dictates monetary policy. Federal Reserve officials, specifically Alberto Musolem and John Williams, have signaled that this energy-driven inflation is keeping core inflation stuck right near that 3% mark.
Right, which is not where they want it to be.
Exactly. So consequently, the anticipated rate cuts are basically off the table. Deutsche Bank is actually projecting the Fed will hold rates steady through the entirety of 2026.
Yeah, no relief in sight.
Right. And this prolonged high-cost capital environment has forced Oxford Economics to downgrade U.S. property capital growth for the year to a marginal 1%.
Just 1%. And when your cost of debt is hovering at these elevated levels and your projected property capital growth is only 1%, the traditional speculative development model just fundamentally breaks down.
Right. You can't justify it.
No, you cannot mathematically justify breaking ground on new projects. And this environment has created a profound bifurcation in the commercial real estate market, or really what the sources call a bifurcation within a bifurcation.
Yeah, I like to think of the current commercial real estate market as a split-screen movie.
Oh, I like that analogy.
On one side of the screen, you have the office sector, which is basically a slow-moving disaster film. And on the other side, you have retail, which is this triumphant against all odds comeback story.
That is a perfect way to visualize it, because the office sector is definitely the disaster film right now. We are seeing a historical reckoning there. National office attendance has stalled, edging down to just 52.2% of its pre-pandemic baseline.
It's just over half.
Exactly. And major governmental and financial hubs reflect this reality clearly. Washington, D.C. is sitting at 49.9% attendance, and New York is barely above 51.6%.
Wow. So they are sitting staggering vacancy records.
Yes, they are. But the retail sector, like you said, the comeback story, is operating under entirely different laws of physics right now. Against all these macroeconomic headwinds, retail is thriving, and the reports attribute this to the market running on the fumes of scarcity.
The fumes of scarcity. I mean, tell me a bit more about the why behind that, because nobody's really building retail right now, are they?
Right. That scarcity is the core mechanism driving retail valuations. Because developers cannot pencil out new projects due to those exorbitant construction and debt costs we just discussed, supply has virtually vanished.
Wow.
Yeah, CoStar data for the first quarter of 2026 shows only 64.2 million square feet of retail currently under construction nationally.
And what's the normal baseline for that?
Well, for context, the 10-year average is 90 million square feet.
Okay, so a huge drop-off.
Exactly. But the scarcity is actually compounding. It's not just a lack of new deliveries. Since 2020, the market has actively subtracted supply.
Right. I read that in the reports. More than 150 million square feet of obsolete retail space has been demolished or repurposed for other uses since 2020.
Exactly. So we have a growing national population, sustained consumer demand, and a physically shrinking pool of storefronts.
Yeah. So those retailers fighting for space are bidding up the price of admission.
Right. This intense competition for limited premium space has driven average shopping center pricing to a record $142 per square foot.
Wow, $142. That's incredible. So if supply is tight everywhere and capital is this expensive, you know, where is the smart money actually flowing? Because the data reveals a definitive geographic migration, right?
Yes, it absolutely does. The smart money is shifting aggressively inland, pulling away from the coasts, and pouring directly into Texas.
And Dallas-Fort Worth is really the crown jewel there.
Undisputed epicenter. We see this across multiple asset classes, honestly. You know, geopolitical uncertainty and shifting trade routes have pushed industrial demand toward the center of the country. Inland regions captured over 90% of industrial space take-ups in the first quarter, led predominantly by Dallas.
Right.
But the retail metrics are where Dallas-Fort Worth truly separates itself from the rest of the country. Dallas currently commands a staggering 10% of the entire national retail construction pipeline.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on this a little bit, or at least ask for some clarification here.
Sure.
If the overarching national narrative is that developers cannot secure financing to build retail because of that 1% capital growth projection and the frozen debt markets, how is it possible that Dallas holds 10% of the entire country's construction pipeline?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what makes DFW the exception to the rule here?
That is the perfect question to ask. And the answer, the insulation from that macro freeze, comes from the specific classification of the assets being built.
Okay.
You know, the word retail often conjures images of enclosed, speculative 1990 shopping malls.
Right, which nobody is building.
Exactly. Those are largely unfinanceable today. The product driving the Dallas-Fort Worth pipeline is entirely different. Developers in DFW are building suburban, mixed-use adjacent centers that are heavily pre-leased.
Pre-leased.
Yes. And more importantly, these centers are anchored by major grocery chains or essential medical and daily needs services.
Right.
This specific asset class, necessity-anchored retail, which is, by the way, precisely the focus of Eureka Business Group, carries a fundamentally different, much safer risk profile.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mechanism of that safety relies on predictable foot traffic, right?
Exactly.
Like, a grocery anchor guarantees that a specific volume of consumers will visit that property multiple times a week, regardless of consumer sentiment or inflation. You still have to buy groceries.
You still have to eat, right?
Yeah, and that guaranteed traffic creates a halo effect for the inline tenants.
Yeah.
You know, the local restaurants, the boutique fitness studios, the service providers.
Absolutely.
And because that cash flow is highly predictable, lenders and private equity firms are still willing to underwrite these projects, even with debt costs sitting at multi-year highs.
Yes, and institutional capital is voting with its wallet to demonstrate profound confidence in this specific model.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, Ares Management provided the ultimate validation of this strategy recently when they agreed to acquire Whitestone REIT and its entire portfolio of open-air shopping centers.
Right, that was huge news.
Yeah, it's a $1.7 billion transaction. But the critical detail is that Ares is executing it as an all-cash deal.
Wait, really? All cash?
$1.7 billion in cash. They are deliberately targeting necessity-led suburban retail spaces located in high-growth Texas corridors. When a private equity titan deploys $1.7 billion in cash to just completely bypass the frozen debt markets entirely, it proves that the unlevered yield on Texas grocery-anchored retail is strong enough to justify massive capital deployment.
Yeah. That is a massive vote of confidence. And the strength of that retail asset class becomes even more apparent when you contrast it with the distress occurring just a few hours south in the Houston office market.
Oh, the bifurcation is brutal.
It really is. While billions in all-cash deals are flowing into Texas suburban retail, massive Houston office campuses like City North are seeing defaulted loans.
Yeah.
and Greenway Plaza, which is, you know, a sprawling 4.5 million square foot office complex, was recently sold in a receivership debt takeover for just $416 million.
Right, which is pennies on the dollar for that kind of square footage.
Exactly. The market is just ruthlessly punishing commodity office space while placing a massive premium on necessity retail.
Precisely. So the physical space in DFW and across Texas is highly coveted, but the next critical layer of analysis is examining who possesses the operational strength to actually secure and maintain these leases in 2026.
Right, the tenant landscape.
Yeah, because the tenant pool is experiencing immense churn right now, resulting in very distinct winners and losers.
Yeah, so let's talk about that tenant churn, because the consumer behavior underlying it is actually pretty complex.
It is.
You know, despite the low consumer sentiment driven by this persistent inflation, consumer spending hasn't collapsed.
No, not at all.
March retail sales actually demonstrated a 0.4% month-over-month growth and an impressive 6.59% year-over-year increase.
Right.
So the capital is still circulating.
Yeah.
But inflation has fundamentally altered where consumers are willing to deploy it.
Exactly. Retailers who understand and adapt to this shift are capturing unprecedented market share. Walmart provides the clearest case study on how to capitalize on this shifting consumer behavior.
Yeah, what are they doing differently?
Well, they are actively accelerating their physical expansion, opening 20 new stores and executing comprehensive remodels across 650 locations this year.
Wow.
And 72 of those remodels are concentrated right here in Texas. Their strategy is rooted in the mechanics of the consumer trade down.
Right. People trading down to save money.
Exactly. Inflation has forced households earning over six figures to change their grocery habits. They have migrated to Walmart to save money on basic necessities.
Right. And Walmart recognized that they had captured this new, highly affluent demographic for groceries, but they needed to monetize that foot traffic beyond just low-margin food items.
Precisely.
So by widening aisles, upgrading the lighting, and introducing prominent premium apparel and home goods displays, they are effectively mimicking the environment of a higher-end department store.
It's brilliant.
It is. They are coaxing that six-figure earner who originally came in just to buy cheaper eggs and milk into purchasing higher-margin discretionary items.
Mm.
It's really a masterclass in adapting physical real estate to leverage a macroeconomic shift.
It truly is. And we are also seeing adaptation from brands that traditionally relied on massive permanent footprints. Like Disney, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Disney is fundamentally rethinking its brick-and-mortar strategy. Rather than carrying the long-term lease liabilities of massive mall stores in a highly segmented market, they've partnered with Go Retail Group to launch pop-up locations in malls.
Oh, pop-up.
Yeah. This allows them to capture peak seasonal foot traffic without committing to 10-year lease terms in properties that might frankly lose their relevance.
Right. It's a highly defensive real estate play that maximizes revenue while minimizing their physical footprint risk.
Exactly. Now, the convenience store sector is where we see the most aggressive divergence in operational models. We have two companies moving in opposite directions.
Right.
And their trajectories really explain a lot about the current state of consumer spending. On one side, you have Yesway, which is a convenience brand highly concentrated in the Southwest.
Right. The ones famous for their deep-fried burritos.
Exactly, the deep-fried burritos. Well, they are currently launching a $321 million IPO to fund an aggressive expansion of 130 new locations.
Wow.
But they are not building standard, you know, corner stores. These are massive 5,800-square-foot facilities situated on nearly four-acre lots, featuring up to 27 fuel pumps and destination food offerings.
Yeah, Yesway's success seems tied to creating a destination footprint that caters to regional travel and logistics corridors.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're building mini travel plazas rather than neighborhood quick stops.
Exactly. But conversely, the traditional convenience model is facing severe operational stress right now. 7-Eleven recently announced plans to close 645 U.S. stores.
645 stores. That is huge.
It is. And the mechanics of their struggle are directly tied to inflation. 7-Eleven relies heavily on a core demographic of low-income consumers making frequent small-dollar discretionary purchases, snacks, beverages, tobacco.
Right. And sticky inflation disproportionately impacts that specific demographic.
Mm.
You know, when housing, energy, and essential food costs rise, the discretionary budget for convenience store purchases basically evaporates first.
Exactly. It's the first thing to go.
So are we witnessing the death of the middle in retail? I mean, we see Walmart successfully pivoting to higher income shoppers and niche brands like Yesway expanding rapidly, while traditional convenience staples like 7-Eleven are basically forced to retreat.
I think you're spot on. I completely confirm this read. Retail is no longer a monolith. Survival in the 2026 retail landscape requires an operating model that is either highly insulated from inflation or capable of attracting a broader, more affluent demographic.
Right.
And this intense tenant churn is highly visible in major Texas markets. In Houston, we're seeing the bankruptcies of legacy big box retailers like Conn's, Kroger, and Big Lots leave massive vacancies.
Yeah, big empty boxes.
But because of the overarching scarcity of retail space we discussed earlier, these boxes are not sitting empty for long. They are being rapidly backfilled by concepts that align with current consumer spending habits.
Right. We are seeing aggressive expansion from fitness operators like Crunch Fitness, specialty grocers like Sprouts and Trader Joe's, and these expansive entertainment concepts taking over these second-generation spaces.
Exactly. The underlying demand for quality retail shelves in established neighborhoods is so powerful that the median time to lease a retail space in Houston has accelerated to an incredibly fast 7.5 months.
7.5 months is wildly fast for commercial leasing.
It really is. But, and this is a big but, that 7.5-month absorption rate only applies to functional, well-located space. The market segmentation is absolute.
Right.
Older properties, specifically those constructed prior to 1990, are largely sitting completely stagnant.
Oh, yeah.
Without major capital injections to modernize layouts, improve parking ratios, and update facades, these older centers just cannot attract the caliber of tenant required to survive in this economic climate.
Yeah, so the data paints a very clear picture of a market that has basically eliminated the middle ground.
Completely.
A retail property today is either a highly desirable destination capturing premium lease rates, or it's an absolute obsolete liability. Mm-hmm. You know, the rising tide is no longer lifting all boats.
No, it's not.
Like, a newly renovated grocery-anchored plaza in a high-growth Dallas suburb is literally turning away prospective tenants, while a dated 1980s strip center just a few miles down the road remains entirely vacant.
That granular property-by-property divergence is the defining characteristic of commercial real estate today. You cannot rely on national or even regional averages to guide investment decisions anymore.
Right.
The success of an asset is dictated by hyper-local factors, you know, the specific neighborhood demographics, the exact tenant mix, the ingress and egress of the parking lot, and the quality of the anchor tenant, which is exactly why having localized expert guidance is more critical now than ever before. So true. So, to summarize the findings from today's deep dive, the macroeconomy is facing severe inflation and interest rate headwinds, causing deep distress in the office sector. However, retail has emerged as the accidental winner due to immense scarcity, with the Dallas-Fort Worth market leading the entire nation in demand, investment, and new construction.
Perfectly summarized. The chasm between premium, necessity-driven retail and obsolete legacy properties will only continue to widen as capital becomes increasingly selective. Navigating a market defined by this extreme bifurcation really does require deep, localized expertise to identify the asset's position for long-term durability.
Right. And in a highly bifurcated market where the gap between premium properties and obsolete ones has never been wider, you really need an expert on your side. That's why Eureka Business Group is your premier partner for navigating the Dallas-Fort Worth retail commercial real estate market.
Absolutely.
But before we officially sign off, I know you had one final thing you wanted to leave the listener to ponder today. Yes. Just a final provocative thought to build on our discussion. We've talked heavily about the intense competition for premium suburban retail space in markets like Texas. But with industrial supply chains and massive retail investments shifting heavily into inland regions, we have to ask ourselves, are we watching a permanent redrawing of the American economic map? If the coastal real estate empires of the last two decades are losing their grip to the Sun Belt, what will the skyline of American commerce look like 10 years from now? Are we going to see retail footprints transition into micro-distribution hubs driven by AI and drone deliveries? It's something to seriously consider.
Wow, that is definitely something to mull over.
Yeah.
The physical architecture of commerce is always evolving to meet the technology of the era.
It is.
Well, thank you to the listener for joining us on this deep dive. We invite you to reach out to Eureka Business Group for all your commercial real estate needs. Catch you next time.